Blog Talk Radio.
It is time for another week of Jay Talking around the Blue Jays organization. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. You can find us online via Twitter at Around Nest. Let me bring in to lead us off today the man who set the table, the voice of the people, Tyler Murray with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Tyler, how are you?
Doing great. You know, I'm seeing a lot of pitches lately. The on-base percentage is way up, so this feels like the right spot for me today.
It's really okay, let's say, if the pitcher strikes you out, as long as it takes 5, 6, 7 pitches of the at-bat, you need to let your teammates see what the pitcher's got that day.
You get it, Jesse. I knew you would. So thanks again. It's good to be with you.
It takes a lot of self-sacrifice. It especially requires very little ego. Tyler Murray, a man with very little ego. Let's talk about your Fisher Cats. Let's begin with Kevin Smith. 3-for-4, 2 homers. This was a pretty good game for him yesterday.
Just terrific stuff. And I really hope when we look back at the 2019 season for Kevin Smith, we kind of just pick it up in the month of July when he hit 8 home runs to lead the league and hit .333, which is second best in the Eastern League. I mean, his struggles early in the season, they just feel miles away at this point. And I keep going back to his mentality and his positive attitude. A lot of guys who struggle will give you the company line, like, oh, we're just going to take it day to day. You can't get too caught up in it. It's a lot easier said than done. And Kevin Smith, he's walking the walk as well. It's been really impressive to see how upbeat he continues to be, how much of a leader he is. And now that it's turning into these kind of results where he's just 2 homers off of the league lead, it's really rewarding to watch him develop the way he has. And it's a guy who's just constantly tweaking his swing. I mean, there's an article came out today, John Lott, or at least he reposted it in The Athletic, about how even after his breakout season last year, he was still seeing flaws in his game and looking to rework his swing. So he's going to be an ever-evolving talent for the Blue Jays. So that's why I think if you're looking at stats or just maybe game by games, Blue Jays fans should never give up on Kevin Smith, and he's proving why this year.
It was something that I remember that our hitting coach last year in Lansing, Matt Young, and this year the Dunedin Blue Jays hitting coach, he would always say to Kevin, because Kevin would say, what do you think of my elbow right here? What do you think about my hip right here? Whatever it might be, as he's breaking down the video footage, Matty would look at him right in the eye and say, forget your elbow, forget your hip, just hit the baseball. Don't worry about anything. Your body's going to take care of itself. Did you realize that he had tried to revamp his swing earlier this year and now was going back to how it had, used to be?
Yeah, well, we heard from him and hitting coach Donnie Murphy, and it's interesting to hear you say how complicated things got last year. The change was just going back to basics, go back to what worked. I mean, we've got some pretty good pitchers in the league this year, Jesse, and that's nothing new. But in your first Double-A experience in this full season in the Eastern League, you're going to have your ups and downs. And Kevin realized that the whole way through, but maybe it wasn't until he really simplified things in the month of July that he realized, all right, I can compete here in this league. And what really impressed me yesterday was he hit 2 home runs and a double his first 3 at-bats. And then in his 4th plate appearance, he walked. He took some close pitches. He wasn't going for just the second 3-homer game in Fisher Cats history. Miguel Negron, of course, I'm sure you remember, 2005. He took 3 pitchers deep in Binghamton back in the day. But just him being patient enough when he had an opportunity to make some history by swinging at bad pitches, just that kind of development was really impressive to watch.
Speaking with Tyler Murray about the AA New Hampshire Fisher Cats, we are going to be talking about some big performances this week and Around the Nest. There were some big offensive outputs. There were a lot of runs that were allowed as well. When we're talking about big performances with New Hampshire, let's go back to Sunday. 10-1 victory over Portland and 18 hits in the game. How much fun was that?
I mean, this offense, they've won 8 out of 10 games, Jesse, so they're really, really clicking. We've seen some good pitching from the bullpen, but to win 8 out of 10 and not really have this loaded starting rotation that you began the year with, and Patrick Murphy is still on the IL. Zach Logue is back, but he's only going 2 innings at a time. Nate Pearson's up in AAA. So I don't want to say they're piecing it together, but they're getting some really impressive outings from some unexpected places. And it's just this offense, they've never really been kind of that home run threat. They hit 4 home runs yesterday, which matched a season high. where you're looking up in Buffalo, maybe it's the different balls up there, but they're hitting four home runs rolling out of bed up there. So it's not necessarily a long ball type offense, but the more consistency we see 1 through 9, it's encouraging with the team as of last night, just now eliminated from second half playoff contention. They're not wasting any at-bats, and they're making the most of these last 2 weeks here.
You said unexpected places. Any of those places that you would like to highlight?
Sure, yeah. Justin Dillon, we talked about him last week. Now that he's fully healthy, it's been great to watch him. 5 wins, 3 losses, a 3.32 ERA. And we've got Thomas Hatch again tonight. And I just keep going back to how easily he seems to get his fastball up to 95. So Hatch was acquired, as you know, for David Phelps from the Cubs in that deadline deal. And then, out of nowhere, William Willette has come in as the back end of a piggyback almost with Hector Perez, who's been limited in his innings lately. He's given up one run his last 12 innings. But then probably the star of the pitching staff right now is the right-hander who's the closer, Danny Jimenez. Jimenez hasn't given up a run since July 25th, 11 and a third innings scoreless with just 3 hits given up during that time. So Jimenez, a guy who didn't start the season here, but when he got called up initially from Advanced Day Dunedin, It was solid. You could see why he got the promotion, but, man, he has kicked it into another gear in the last month plus as this scoreless streak continues to climb. Again, 3 hits since July 25th, 11 and a third scoreless for Danny Jimenez.
Lastly, with Tyler Murray talking about the AA New Hampshire Fisher Cats, an Around the Nest question posted on Bluebird Banter, and I think that you've already started to answer this. Have there been any pitchers shut down yet for workload limits, was the question from Eric T. And let me also supplement that. You mentioned the decreased innings. Have there been any pitchers who their innings have now been shortened due to perhaps workload goals being reached or neared?
Right. That is a good question. And it seems like they're winding down Hector Perez and Justin Dillon as well. So with Zach Logue coming back from some arm soreness, shoulder soreness, he's, I guess, ramping back up a bit, but he's been out since the All-Star break. So a lot of those guys slowing things down a bit. But certainly Perez and Dillon are at or at least near the end of their efforts this season. I do also, unrelated, want to add, I know it's the last question, quick shout-out to Cullen Large, Jesse. He has been here for a couple of weeks, and he started his first 4 games in AA going 0-for, but it was against some of the best pitching prospects in the game, let alone this league. And after he got out of that rut, 9-game hitting streak, had an 0-for 2 days ago, comes back yesterday, 2-for-4 with a triple and an RBI single. So Cullen Large, after a slow start, really, really impressive in his first AA stint, 5th rounder out of William and Mary just 2 years ago. So he's a name to keep an eye on.
He's such a good guy, too. You can find Tyler Murray, who's a pretty good guy himself, LT_Murray. He's the voice of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. He's the voice of the people. Tyler, thank you very much.
We're all just trying to keep up with you, Jesse. Thanks a lot, man.
Not a chance. And from Tyler, let's move up the ladder to AAA Buffalo. Let me bring in Pat Malacara. Pat, how good has the pitching been recently that you've been watching with yesterday? Just as an exception, we'll set it aside for the moment.
Yeah, and honestly, Jesse, you know, we look at the no-hitter on Monday by T.J. Zoik, followed up by Nate Pearson's AAA debut, and then Anthony Kay after that. Both three are legitimate top-end AAA pitching, and they've lived up to the bill. But then you add in somebody like Connor Fisk, who's going to start tonight against for the Bisons. Started a little bit in his pro career, went back as a reliever full-time last year. All of a sudden, he's been a steadying force in the Bison rotation. So the starting pitching, which at one point went 22 and two-thirds innings without giving up a run to Rochester, has been pretty rock solid 1 through 5.
We began this season talking about, all right, Buffalo is going to be a great lobby waiting on the major leagues. This is where Bo is going to start. This is where Vladdy is going to start. And then Vladdy Jr.'s injury, and then Bo got hurt. Now I think we really do have that major league waiting room in your starting rotation. Can you remember a time such as this one in the years that you've been in Buffalo that you can say your top three, possibly top four starters are all going to be Blue Jays starters right down the road and not all that far away?
No, in the 7 years of the affiliation, this is as good as it's gotten. And I think all three the encouraging sign is all three bring something different to the table. I think when you look at TJ Zoik, I think he's just a guy that's going to go out every 5 days, and he's going to go five, six, maybe sometimes seven innings for you. So for the Blue Jays, and, you know, as much fun as it is to see guys at the top of the rotation blow guys away and just light up the radar gun, Zoik's just going to go out there and take the ball for you, and you know what you're going to get every 5 days. And I think that's a valuable piece for rotation. And then if you add in somebody like Nate Pearson, who had very good returns in his AAA debut and will throw again on Sunday, that's another good sign. And then you mix in a lefty like Anthony Kay, who can be a middle of the rotation guy as well. I think the fact that you're getting something different from all three of those guys is another additional piece to kind of look forward to.
Pat, about the no-hitter. You are broadcasting on the Fan 590, so this is being heard by a lot of people. TJ Zoik is on the mound, Blue Jays' first-round draft choice, who there's just this feeling, well, he's a first-rounder, he still has the ability, and maybe he's starting to make something of himself. Was that your game of the year?
Paul, without question. The play of the season, maybe the play of the decade, whatever you want to call it, the 7 years of affiliation and the ninth inning by Jonathan Davis to save the no-hitter. I mean, everything about that game, that performance by the team, by TJ, getting enough offense as well. I mean, that is, regardless of where the rest of the season goes, playoffs or not, I think you look back at that. And to add in the fact that the Bisons have not had a no-hitter, anybody in the pitching staff has not thrown a no-hitter in 22 years. The last guy to do it was Bartolo Colon. I'm not going to tell you that TJ Zoik's going to be the next Bartolo Colon, but that's some pretty rarefied air to be included in. So add in the historical aspect of it, and this game goes beyond just this year and maybe the 7 years of the affiliation.
Were you there when Bartolo Colon was pitching for Buffalo?
I was not at that game, but I did come to a couple of games when Bartolo was on the mound. You knew he'd be something special. My broadcast partner, Duke McGuire, was actually on a TV broadcast the night that Bartolo threw his no-hitter on June 20th in 97. So he has seen the only two in the modern era, which is from 1985 to now. And he was somebody we all knew would be special. We didn't know how special he would be, but we knew he'd be something that people would be talking about for a while. And boy, did he live up to that.
Did you turn to Duke at any point? Was the conversation topic broached between the two of you during a commercial break that there's a real possibility of a Zoik no-hitter tonight?
It was kind of unspoken. We looked at each other a couple of times, and in this day and age of social media, there's a lot of times when we're on the road, I'll be the one that tweets out for the team. So, it was kind of the awkward conversation of at what point do you put the words out there on social media? Because the second you do, and at basic given up, well, then you're the village idiot. So it was kind of that, but, by the same token, neither of us shied away from it either because, you do have a responsibility to the people listening. To if you're just tuning in the eighth inning, you need to know that a no-hitter is being thrown. So it's one of those things that we knew each other, what other was thinking, and we didn't actually use the words no-hitter until the ninth, but we figured out ways of whether it was facing the minimum, hasn't given up a hit, zeros across, you name it. We figured out ways to mention it without, until the ninth inning, say there was a no-hitter.
Just awesome. All right, big Nate Pearson's debut. You've read a lot. You've heard a lot about him. Maybe you tried to watch some video of him pitching before he got to you. What was your first impression of actually watching him pitch in a Buffalo uniform?
That for just his age, now this was his birthday too, he turned 23 on Tuesday. For 23 years old, he is very calm and collected on the mound. A lot of pitchers, even though it's, I'll say, just AAA, making the leap from AA to AAA, a lot of guys the moment can be too big for them. Even though it's not the big leagues, it's that next level up. But I really never felt that Nate, the moment was too big for him. He was always ready on the mound, always ready with the next pitch, in sync with his catcher. It was actually Andre Sotillo catching. So there was a little bit of familiarity with him being in New Hampshire all year long, whether it be on the IL or a couple of games behind the plate. So having that little familiarity instead of someone you maybe would not have had behind the plate, like a Bo Taylor who just joined the team, I think that maybe helped out as well. But we didn't see 100 on Tuesday. I hope we see 100 on Sunday, and I hope to see more good success for Pearson as well.
Pat WGR on Twitter. Pat Molicaro, the voice of the herd. Lastly, Pat, before I bring in Rob Fay to talk Vancouver Canadiens, how do things look for the Buffalo Bison's playoff chances?
They're still in the hunt. It's a little bit tougher today than it was going into this week. Buffalo has to now leapfrog Syracuse in addition to the three games back of Scranton Wilkes-Barre. But the good news is the Herd plays Scranton four times to end the season. If you're within four, and even right there with Syracuse, you give yourself a fighting chance. And who knows, in the big leagues, there's game 163 every once in a while. There's even the possibility of game 141 here in AAA. So just giving this team a chance over the final week of the season. It's further than they've been in any of the affiliation with the Blue Jays. So it's as close as the Herd has come in now 7 years. It's exciting times.
Excellent. We'll be cheering you on. Thank you very much. Pat Molicaro, the voice of the Buffalo Bison.
Thanks, Jesse. I didn't even need the reminder this week. What a miracle.
And from Pat, let me bring in Rob Fay, the voice of the Vancouver Canadians, the voice of the seas. Rob, how are you this week?
Well, fantastic. And much like Buffalo, we're kind of hanging around in our division as well. We need to leapfrog a few teams. But again, we're a lot better off than we were a week ago.
All right, let's talk about your ace. You've got several different aces. Let's go. Let's begin with Alex Nolan, because King Cloth, Matt Manoah, wait. It was another gem from Nolan. What did you see from yesterday?
You know, when I saw a guy that understands he's probably only got two or three more starts this season, and considering the Blue Jays don't have the money sunk into Nolan the way that they do with Manoah or Kloffenstein, he's acutely aware of where he sits in the pecking order within the Blue Jays organization. So he understands that these last three starts are extremely valuable to allowing his name to be bandied about before spring training and maybe gets a better look next year, perhaps in Lansing. But focused, composed, worked ahead of a lot of hitters in yesterday's game. Unfortunately, right now, the Canadians are in a real nasty offensive funk. So he had to be near perfect and actually was a pretty hard luck loser in yesterday's game.
From Nolan, King Cloth. Once again, Adam Kloffenstein is going out there, and he's putting forth starts that are grabbing notice. We don't have a lot of Lansing Lugnuts pitchers who've been able to pitch beyond six to get through seven innings this year, and here's the 18-year-old doing exactly that. How about Kloffenstein's most recent effort?
You know, Kloffenstein has been such a pleasant surprise, and he shouldn't be a surprise as a third-rounder from last year's draft, but because nobody really got eyes on him in 2018, this is essentially his first foray into professional baseball. He has exceeded every expectation I could have had. And you know what? I always have to remind myself that he just is about to turn 19. He turns 19 on the 25th of this month, and he's been extraordinary. And you know what's interesting about Kloff, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on Around the Nest before, but he's the guy that when he's charting games, not just for his start, but for starts of the guys around him, he'll make little extra notes. He'll be like, hey, this guy likes to swing away. So instead of just doing the minimum amount to hand in his stuff to Dmitry Kokaris, our pitching coach, he'll come in with a secondary page of his own personal thoughts on how to attack those hitters. He'll then take those, apply them to his start, and that's why he's been so consistently good for the Canadians in 2019.
That seems just highly beyond his years. That seems like something that
Yes.
you would hear from an older player having the idea to do.
Well, I think he understands that there's a lot of pressure on him. I've had a couple of conversations with him just in passing where, you know, it's funny. He knew the reputation that he had coming into this organization, that maybe he was a little, you know, a little much. And so humility has gone perfectly side and side with each one of his outings. And, you know, even at the end of yesterday's game, there was a little girl in Pasco that was sourcing out Adam Kloffenstein, like a 4 or 5 year old girl. And I said to the dad, I said, what's the story there? And she said that during the game, he was the one that came over and gave her a baseball and took time to talk with her. And she remembered that. So just as they were boarding the bus, Kloff and her had a conversation. And so you pull back from all of the numbers and all the analytics of Kloff, and the thing that you would impress with the most is just how he understands his surroundings. Everything around him is magnified. And I'll tell you what, I know right now we're focusing on Zoik and Pearson, and rightly so, but that next wave behind them has got a special 18-year-old that's got some big league stuff.
Rob, I think this is kind of one of the purposes of Around the Nest, right? We get to say,
yeah,
Blue Jays fans, here's who's coming. And now here's what's coming next, and here's what's coming next, and let's let you know what is happening at the different affiliates and who are these names that you need to know. The great Mr. Langton has recorded an intro that we use where he gets to say, hey, before I say these names at Rogers Center, you get to hear these names in Around the Nest for the very first time, and we get to hear Rob Fay speak these names or Zach Helton speak these names. I pulled up your box score from the most recent good Canadians offensive showing because the offense has gone into a slump as of late. The 8-3 win over the Boise Hawks from back on Monday. And I look at that and I see a 3-8 game for Cameron Eden. I see a fine game for Tanner Morris right at the top of the order. So let me start with Cameron Eden, who's taken in the top 10 rounds, taken as a college guy. What have you seen from Eden?
Well, Cameron Eden has striking similarities in the way that he plays to Reggie Pruitt. So for those in Lansing and a couple of different levels who have appreciated Reggie's game, Reggie almost looks like Jamiroquai on that conveyor belt as he dances. It's just amazing how much ground. Yes, a Jamiroquai reference. How quick he can get to a baseball in the outfield. He makes ballparks feel small defensively, and that's because he's got a tremendous first step. He's got tremendous baseball instinct. And I think defensively, he's been just as good as he's been offensively. The one thing that I'd like to see is him get the ball on the ground a few more times. He's got a lot of fly ball outs this year, especially in the second half, and he's got to let that speed work to his advantage. I mean, don't get me wrong. If it's in the gap, you're thinking triple, not double. But again, a guy that if he puts the ball on the ground is going to find probably a little more success.
And then I listen into the C's Plus podcast just to check in, see what's going on. Benjamin Steiner will drop me a line anytime there's a new podcast. And I happen to hear on the most recent one that he thought that Tanner Morris was progressing from how he started to where he is now. How have you seen Morris develop?
You know, it's actually a pretty good assessment. And by the way, Ben Steiner is one of the bright young minds in this game. And I love his blog along with Niall O'Donohoe. But Tanner Morris, I think he's one of those guys where it's frustrating because he wants to work counts. And in this day and age, everybody's talking about hunt the fastball, get ahead, work ahead. And get. He reminds me back when we had an affiliation with the Oakland A's, where the A's were always like, work deep into the count, see pitches. And Morris has been at the top of the order, which kind of fits the MO of a guy that's going to work a count a little bit more. So I see him finally now starting to transition to working a little bit earlier in the count. He'll see a first pitch fastball and make contact as opposed to working at 2-1, 2-2, 3-2. And that to me is where I think you get the quote unquote progress. It's just seeing him start to get a little more assertive earlier in counts. And he's actually had some benefit because of it.
Let me finish off. Rob Fay, voice of the Vancouver Canadiens. Should we mention it all 0 to 1,000?
I would love to mention 0 to 1,000. Yeah, my grandfather had written a couple of books back in his day. And, you know, just as everything gets so harebrained in today's day and age, you know, I've got two kids and a wife and all these expectations from different people. I just wanted to make sure that at some point in my career, I stopped and wrote a book about what I had seen through the first 1,000 games. So, I found a publisher. Found a timeline. I'm already about halfway done. And really, it's not just about me. It's more about the journey through the Northwest League and what I've seen on the bus in multiple years with the minor league of the Toronto Blue Jays and the Oakland A's. And just little behind-the-scenes stories that I think might make for a good read if you're on one of your longer road trips.
Rob, that's terrific. Congratulations. And huge congratulations on being halfway there because, man, is that some kind of a undertaking for you to experience. You know me, I love writing. Writing is difficult. Writing a book, I remember a writer saying once, you fall out of love with it as quickly as you fall in love with the whole process. So congratulations
well, you
to
know
you.
What? I thank you for that very quickly. The one thing that I've learned in writing the first portion of this book is how bad I am at grammar and how quickly I remember that I should have gone to grade 9 English and grade 10 English because there's a few things that I still need to learn. So thank God I have a good editor.
At Rob Fay on Twitter, the voice of the Vancouver Canadians. Rob, thank you.
My pleasure, Jesse.
And from Rob in Vancouver, let me bring in Zach Helton with the Bluefield Blue Jays talking Appalachian League baseball. Zach, how are you?
Doing great, Jesse. How are you, my man?
I'm doing very well. Have you already started to think up in your mind, okay, these stories would make a great book?
Yes. I think almost every night in the Appalachian League is something that is very book-worthy, some for the podcast, maybe some for there's always something every night that kind of is like, oh, yeah, that makes sense why that's happening here, more so than not.
This is one of your predecessors. When I first started bringing Bluefield Blue Jays broadcasters on around the nest, I started going into it, and you know, with you in general, very similar to the majority of the broadcasters, hey, this guy had a good game, let's talk about it. Hey, this guy appears to be playing well, or I don't know too much about this guy, what does this guy look like? But I would sometimes just say, hey, tell me an Appy League story from this past week, or what was something that happened? And it was always just a joy to hear about, and things that would drop my jaw. Is there anything from this past week that you would like to share?
Well, last night in the 11th game of the Mercer Cup, I was in the press box at Honeycutt Field in Princeton, and the umpire, you know, they're young umpires, they're very much like the players, and both teams were very agitated with the strike zone. There was a lady probably within 5 feet of my crowd mic who got a little personal with the umpire, and you could probably go back and listen to the broadcast and catch some of that verbiage from her that may not be suitable for young children, but I think I caught the mic just in time before she got a little out of hand, and she may have been a few beverages deep, but nonetheless, she was a P-Rays fan, and she went home disappointed, and all is well right now in the Blue Jays organization today, despite her thoughts on the Appalachian League umpires.
I had a fan, I might have told this story on a previous Around the Nest, so if I have, forgive me. In Dayton, Ohio, I used to lean my crowd microphone out the window, connected to an XLR, so it looked like a microphone, a normal microphone on a cord, and drunken fans walking past it, walking along the upper deck concourse, saw it, and thought, karaoke. And they grabbed it, and suddenly they started crooning away into the crowd microphone, and they didn't have half bad voices, but you can imagine how that sounded on the radio.
Yeah, thankfully this lady didn't try to sing, but what was picked up was just bad enough.
Let's go back to yesterday. Bluefield 9, Princeton 6, that's your final score. How do things currently look in the Mercer Cup?
Well, last night was the 11th and final game, so they won the Mercer Cup outright last night, 6-5. It started off rather eerily, really. Princeton scored 6 in the first two, and Bluefield had to crawl back. But once Princeton got into the bullpen, the Jays, you know, just started hitting Princeton Rays pitching rather well. And then a 3-run eighth inning, and then three more and with two outs in the ninth, ended up finishing off the Rays. And it was a very exciting series. On the broadcast last night, I was talking about last year, you know, two of the best teams in the league were in Mercer County. This year, not so much, but the series had its drama all year round, and it kind of finished off with probably one of the more exciting games I've seen in the Appalachian League in a few years. And last night, with Jays coming back 6-0 and ended up holding off Princeton there in the ninth.
I'm looking over the box score right now. It's a fantastic comeback. It's a great job, too, after Roythur Hernandez, who earlier this year, not all that long ago, had just tossed a gem of a start. He didn't have it. They knocked him out. But Alvarez, Cuevas, and Huckabee gave you great relief, and then the offense took over from there. Zach, just reading through your batting averages and the OPSs, it's right now 383, 308, 330 for your top three hitters for Ammon, Zeraldo, and Horwitz. And then 264, 272, 295, 313, 327, DJ Daniels batting ninth. 210. He had two hits, a walk, and a home run yesterday. These, to my mind, are simply outstanding hitting numbers. Now, you've seen Bluefield Blue Jays baseball. This is not your first rodeo. You've seen Appy League baseball. These kind of offensive numbers being put up, is there anything unusual to seeing this kind of balanced, outstanding offensive production?
No, it was very similar last year. With Schneider having a good year, Cal Stevenson had a tremendous year last year, and even a few years ago with Ryan Noda, the past few years, offensive power has been there at Bluefield. This year, the bullpen has kind of been the bugaboo in a few starting outings. That it kind of feels like the offense has had to put pressure on themselves, saying we need 8-10 runs a night to win. Last night, Roythur coming off arguably his best outing as a professional, kind of came up a little short last night, but the pen pulled together with Cuevas, and you mentioned Alvarez pitched a heck of a ball game, and then Huckabee came in and closed it out. But it's been that quiet type of year. The Jays have put the offensive numbers out there. They've scored, you know, 4 or 5 runs a ball game, but sometimes the pitching just hasn't been there, and that's kind of the situation they're in now. You know, very on the outside looking in with the playoff spot.
Before we get into the playoffs, about Justin Ammons. He only was 1 for 5 yesterday with a hit and a walk and 2 runs scored. This followed earlier this week. He had a 4-hit, 3-double game. What have you seen from Ammons recently?
Well, not only was offense, but defensively last night, he made a leaping grab, crashed into the fence there. Princeton held one of the guys to a single on a diving stop in the gap. So his defense with his speed, he's been rather well all around. And even on his low nights, a couple nights ago, he was 0-for-4 going into the bat in the ninth and ended up drawing a bunt and sprinting it out. And that's just another tool that he has. You know, if he's having a bad night at the plate, not seeing pitches well or not connecting squarely, he can lay down a bunt and beat it out and provide some great offense that way. So that kid is very special. I'm not sure how he went undrafted from UT, a big SEC school, and as athletic as he is, but I'm just glad he's in a Blue Jays uniform right now.
All right, standings. The elimination number, according to the website I'm looking at, is 2. Bluefield's record is 30-31. Burlington, 36-26, so 5.5 back. And then Pulaski, 40-22. So things are looking grim for the playoffs, huh?
Yeah, Pulaski has already solidified their slot, so they'll either at worst be second. It's right now Burlington to kind of get now. The last three games of the year at Bluefield is going to be against Burlington. I was looking, you know, a few weeks ago when the playoff picture looked a little bit better. I thought, well, that series may come down to be very meaningful for Bluefield. But I think if Bluefield drops one of these here at Kingsport this weekend or Burlington goes on a sweep there, then that last three won't matter. But it's baseball. You never know. But it does look really, really grim for Bluefield here this year. But despite all that, the young guys, you see the averages, and even the pitchers whose, you know, numbers don't look as well, I can tell. They look a lot better. They've developed rather nicely in Bluefield from day one off the bus till now, and you've got to feel good about what the Blue Jays have put on the field, not only this year, but many years in the past here in the Appalachian League.
Zach, you won the Mercer Cup.
Yes, that's true. You can't shake a stick at the Mercer Cup. That's always good to win, and always good to shut up fans who hate umpires who sit under your crowd mic. So that's always fun. And nonetheless, I'll be wearing Blue Jays gear around Mercer County for weeks to come until football starts, and then they kind of quit thinking about baseball and think about football. But I got a few weeks window there that I'll wear every stitch of Bluefield Blue Jays gear I have in and around Princeton and in the entire Mercer County area.
Atta baby, eat it, Princeton Rays. Zach Helton can be found on Twitter at @Z_Helton. Zach, thank you so much.
Jesse, it's always a pleasure, my man.
All right, beautiful. Let's see if he can call us some winners for the Bluefield Blue Jays. Zach Helton down in the Appy League, advanced rookie affiliate for the Toronto Blue Jays. Now let's jump up to Single A in the Midwest League, and let me bring in my broadcast partner, Adam Jaxa. Adam, how are you?
Jesse, I am doing tremendous. Happy Friday to you. Ready to talk some Lansing Lugnuts baseball.
We begin by talking Midwest League postseason All-Stars. The postseason All-Stars were announced today. Those All-Stars, the right-handed relief pitcher, the top right-handed relief pitcher in the Midwest League, Cree Finfrock. Let's begin right there. Your thoughts on Cree being awarded overall among all right-handed relievers in the league?
Well, we were just super surprised with what he brought this year, Jesse. I mean, you don't have extreme high expectations for someone that's drafted 29th over in the 29th round in last year's draft, but Cree Finfrock out of Central Florida came in early May, and just about, it seemed like a couple of weeks, he started to insert himself as that closing role pitcher for the Lansing Lugnuts. And here we are talking in late August towards the end of the season. He's 15 for 15 in saves. He's never blown a save. He's become that shutdown back-end guy for the Lugnuts when they have a lead going into the ninth inning. He's been electric. Really fun to watch his stuff.
great command of his fastball, has a nice changeup, a slider, and a curveball that keeps hitters off balance. Really impressed with what he's brought this year to the Lansing Lugnuts, and expect him to continue to grow and continue to get better as he moves up this organization, expecting him to go up the ladder next year as well.
The other postseason All-Star, the right fielder. The three outfielders were Will Benson from Lake County, the first rounder, 2016 promoted. Alec Thomas, the Kane County teenager, Arizona Diamondbacks prospect, one of the top prospects in all of minor league baseball. And the second rounder from 2018 out of Duke University, Griffin Conine. Adam, Griffin Conine has played 70-some games with the Lansing Lugnuts. I'm looking down at my stats right now. How many games has Conine played? Exactly 70. And he leads the league with 20 home runs. He receives postseason All-Star recognition. Your thoughts on Griff?
Well, he's a power hitter, Jesse. I mean, opposed to Cree Finprock, who came in, we had a little bit more background on Griffin Conine, his second-round draft pick out of Duke. Of course, the son of Jeff Conine, the former big leaguer that spent a lot of time with the Florida Marlins. So, I mean, for Conine coming in, we heard a lot about that power, and he put it on display this year, best he has since joining the Toronto Blue Jays organization. You said it, 20 home runs, that leads the Midwest League. He did that quicker than anybody else in the league. Will Benson, who was promoted around the All-Star break by the Lake County Captains, was the one that was out in front, and it was Griffin Conine that did it a few games fewer than him, and he got those 20 home runs. Average right now right around 280. That's dipped a touch, but he came into Dayton 50 games into the season. The Lugnuts were playing against the Dayton Dragons, and he immediately made an impact, getting on base with extra base hits, hitting home runs at a premium in that series, and that really set the table, and Griffin Conine just took off that typical power-hitting left-handed bat. He has had some struggles striking out this year, but, man, when he makes contact, whether it's a breaking ball or a fastball, he can get a hold of it, and it's been fun to watch this season.
Speaking with Adam Jackson about the Class Single-A Lansing Lugnuts, the Blue Jays affiliated in the Midwest League, the Lansing Lugnuts also feature, in addition to the saves leader and the home run leader, the base hits leader in the Midwest League. And Adam, Otto Lopez has not even played the whole season. He missed key time due to injury. And yet Otto Lopez is right there, first in the league in hits and first in the league in batting average. What have you seen from Otto recently?
The thing that steps up or sticks out most to me about Otto Lopez, you talk about when he went down on the IL, Jesse, it was like 2 to 2.5 weeks where he went down and you wondered and you were nervous, is he going to take a step back or is it going to take him some time to get going again? The first pitch that he saw, coincidentally, just like Griffin Conine, in Dayton, he hit it out to left field, and he's not a guy with a ton of pop this year. I think he's got, what, 4 or 5 home runs. But first swing, he didn't miss it, crushed it, and that really set the table for Otto Lopez continuing this streak. He just had a 19-game hitting streak end, which is tied for the longest in the Midwest League. His last 21 games, he's got 33 hits, 5 doubles, a couple of triples, 12 driven in with 6 walks, and only 8 strikeouts. So Dallas McPherson moved him to the top of the order. He's become the leadoff man, and he is not disappointed, finding ways to get on base. Typically, an Otto Lopez game, you're seeing line drives to the outfield. You're seeing him get on 2-3 different times. Only 20 years old. He's got a high ceiling as he continues to move on. But you look at this offense, there have been some really fun players this year for the Lugnuts. With a Griffin Conine, Jordan Groshans obviously went down with an injury earlier, but Alejandro Kirk, who was promoted quickly to Dunedin, and of course Otto Lopez, and we haven't even talked about a Gabriel Moreno, who's a top prospect as well. I mean, this season in Lansing, there's some really good offensive performances that you and I have been able to witness.
Well, an offensive performance that we witnessed was a 19-1 victory. We began the show talking about, hey, there have been some interesting games. New Hampshire won 10-1. Buffalo just lost 20-3. Lansing won 19-1, and that game turned absurd. What stood out to you the most about that win over Fort Wayne?
Well, we saw an 8-run sixth inning. That's the most runs the Lansing Lugnuts had scored in a half inning this season. We saw 2 position players come in the 8th inning for Fort Wayne, where Lansing scored 5 runs. Typically, you see 1 position player, but the 1 position player was struggling so much that they had to bring in another one. So 13 runs were scored in just two half innings. The pressure was put on. Three different home runs from Ryan Gold. Rafael Lantigua completed his week as this last week. He hit three home runs in 7 days after having none with the Lansing Lugnuts when joining them since May. And then Griffin Conine hit his 20th home run in that eighth inning as well. So I think just the relentlessness from these Lugnuts in those half innings where they put together great at-bats, strung together big hits, timely swings. Unfortunately, since that game, the offense has quieted a lot compared to what we saw with that tease of a 19-run game, but you're not going to get that every single game. 19 runs, the most this season, 18 hits, the most we've seen this year, and an 18-run win, which is the biggest in Lansing Lugnuts franchise history. It was quite the finish to that three-game set, and a nice win in the rubber match against the Fort Wayne Tin Caps.
Let's talk playoff picture now. We heard from Bluefield, things don't look good. We heard from Buffalo that they're still right in the thick of things. How do things look for Lansing?
Well, unfortunately, they don't look good right now. Again, there's an opportunity, but this is their biggest series of the year. We're down here in South Bend. They came into this series a couple games back of the Cubs, and you're hoping they could win two of three. You were dreaming of a sweep. You certainly don't want to get swept, and that's what the Lansing Lugnuts are staring in the face of tonight, trying to avoid that sweep. They're now four games back of the Cubs for the wild card spot, six games back of Bowling Green. We have just 11 to play. And the tougher news is that South Bend owns the tiebreaker with the head-to-head matchup. So technically, you look at tonight, Lansing's five games back because they have to finish above South Bend in order to get into the playoffs. So if you can win tonight, South Bend and Bowling Green are going to play each other seven times. You hope that maybe one of those teams can dominate that series. And the Lugnuts, with seven straight games coming up at home and seven of their last 10 at home, is going to help things out. But right now, they're going to need some help, and they're going to have to get hot quick and end this three-game losing streak.
At Adam Jaksa on Twitter, J-A-K-S-A, he broadcasts the Lugnuts games with me. The Lansing Lugnuts getting near the end of their season. Let's see how they finish. Adam, thank you very much.
Jesse, thank you. And remember, even if the Lugnuts don't win tonight, I feel like they're going to have a magical night tomorrow at Cooley Law School Stadium.
It's Harry Potter night tonight in New Hampshire, Adam. It's Harry Potter night tomorrow in Lansing. I know that you will enjoy it.
Love it.
Well, Adam Jaksa calls the games with me, and among the players for the Lugnuts that we've had the great fortune to watch is Yoman Rodriguez. So Rodriguez played last year in Vancouver, hitting the 260s, went back to Vancouver this year, and you'll hear why over the course of the upcoming interview, exactly what he credits for why he was batting 369. This interview occurred, we were sitting in the visitor's dugout, I'm sitting next to Yorman, and we had Randy Pondler and Jose Espada sitting across from us, ready to translate whenever he needed it. Yorman Rodriguez, like a number of his teammates, working big time on his English, so when he was able to answer in English, he would. When he didn't understand, it was translated for him. When he preferred to speak in Spanish, then Randy Pondler translated in English. But get to know a man 22 years of age out of Maracay, Venezuela, who really is a top-notch hitter.
This is Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, joined by Yoman Rodriguez of the Lansing Lugnuts. Besides baseball, did you play any other sports?
No, just baseball.
And I know that you're now a first baseman. What other positions have you played?
Catcher before and get here.
When did you change from catcher to first base?
This year.
This year?
Yeah.
What's the hardest thing about playing first base?
I played first base before in 2015 and 2016. So that was easy for me because I played before first base.
Who asked you? Who said, "Hey, Yoman, let's talk about changing positions"?
Nobody.
Nobody?
Nobody.
You said, "I want to change
positions"? No, one day I saw the lineup and I saw first base, and I played first base.
Did you have a first baseman's glove?
Yeah, I got.
Do you miss being a catcher?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel good as a first base.
Let's go all the way back to when you were first signed by the Toronto Blue Jays. Okay. So you were playing in a 15-under tournament. Okay. and all these scouts were watching you.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, okay, so you're 16 years old, almost 17, and you sign this contract to become a professional baseball player. What happens then?
I went to Dominican Summer League. I played there, and then next year I went to Florida first time.
During the Dominican Summer League, had you ever visited the Dominican Republic before?
No.
What was that like?
Was normal because it's a Latin country, and was normal for me.
Were the baseball fields very similar to the Venezuelan stadium?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so now Dominican Summer League, and now off the next year, onward you go, and now you're playing in Florida. What was that like?
Was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes hard for me because the, ¿cómo se dice el idioma?
A language.
The language.
So now you're in Florida, you start taking English.
Yeah.
I know how much better your English has gotten.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your English now compared to a couple of years ago?
Good.
Yeah.
Better than a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Especially you're a catcher.
Yeah.
You have to talk to pitchers who might not speak Spanish.
Exactly.
The players who you came out of, let's say you're growing up in Maracay, Venezuela.
Yeah.
Did you have any friends who also signed contracts?
Yeah, a lot of friends.
Is there anyone right now, minor leagues, major leagues?
Yeah, I play with Jelsin Gudiño. Luis Arraez is in big league right now. And other players.
Okay, so you've now worked your way up to the Lansing Lugnuts. Last year you were playing for Vancouver. You batted about 260. This year you go back to Vancouver. You hit 369. You're a Northwest League All-Star. Why were you so much better this year than last year?
Ya entendí lo que me dijo, pero... O sea, dile que el año pasado tenía problemas con la vista. Para ver la pelota y eso. Este año empecé a usar lentes de contacto. Y
you had problems with your vision.
Yeah.
So now contact lens?
Yeah.
So now you can see the ball a lot better.
A lot better.
Oh my gosh. So now, did hitting suddenly get a lot easier this year and it was difficult last year?
El año pasado.
Mm-hmm. Last year.
Me sentí mal, pues, como si no sabía batear.
So you felt bad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. En este año me siento mejor. This year I feel better.
This year you feel so much better?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So you can now see better. You can now see the ball better. You go, you play in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
And then who told you, when were you told, hey, you're going up to Lansing?
After the game, in the All-Star game,
mm-hmm.
I saw my phone, and I saw the messenger
uh-huh.
of the manager. Hey, Yorman, how are you? I need to talk to you. They said, wow. Como que esta es la hora. This is the time. And he called me, and he told me, hey, you go to Lansing. He said, okay.
Your first game with the Lugnuts, double, triple, single, single. Your third game with the Lugnuts, single, double, triple. How good are you feeling?
Dile que me sentí normal. Solo traté de hacer lo que he venido estando haciendo y me salieron las cosas.
Oh, so what he says that he just feel like normal, so all that he do, he try to bring it up. Like, you know, he was doing pretty good in Vancouver, and then he came up and tried to keep doing the same stuff, you know, and everything worked out good for him, you know, like so far.
What are you working on right now at home plate? What are you working on hitting?
Solo tratar de darle la bola bien y
so he said he just try to like make a good swing and hit the ball hard, you know, and then try to get like advance, like a front on base, he just try to get them like, you know, to advance, like so we can score runs.
Something I saw about you don't strike out, He struck out only 12 times for Vancouver. Is this something that you've always done, is make contact, that you don't strike out?
Yeah.
When did that start?
Cuando era niño.
When you were a boy.
Yeah.
You were a catcher for years and years. Now you're a first baseman. You haven't been a first baseman very long. What are you working on defensively?
Solo tratar de agarrar la bola y... No es muy difícil, solo tratar de agarrar la bola y saber dónde tengo que ir.
So he says it's not difficult for him because when he was at 15 years, 16 years old, he used to play first base, so he already know.
Yeah.
So I mean, he just try to catch a ball and try to get the out, go to the base, touch it and get the out. That's the most important part of it, he said.
Is it more fun to be a first baseman or a catcher?
Sí. Porque menos golpe, menos presión, te sientes más relajado, menos responsabilidad para ti.
So I say being a catcher, it's a lot of pressure, a lot of ball hit down in the picked down in the dirt, and then you get a lot of hit or stuff like that. But on first base, he just feel relaxed because he's just gonna feel ground ball and he feel much better, being a first base, because he not getting that amount of hit with baseball behind there, being a catcher.
Do you talk to the first base coach or to base runners at all?
No.
You don't talk to the runner, you don't talk to the first base coach? And then, finally, with Yoman Rodriguez, besides baseball, what else do you like to do?
Me gustaba jugar fútbol, pero del callejero, no de torneo y cosas así.
Oh, so what he says is that besides baseball, he likes to play soccer, but not like event or like tournament or stuff like that. It's not just on the street, it's in hometown. They'll just play on the street, they'll just play football on the street. So that's what he loves,
So I know Gabriel Moreno is a midfielder. What position are you in soccer?
Delantero. Los delanteros son los que meten goles.
So he said he's in football he's the guy that always he'd be the one that always been in front.
Oh yeah, striker.
Yeah.
Have you scored a lot of goals?
Yeah.
Hey, Yoman Rodriguez. Muchas gracias. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Randy Pondler and Jose Espada. That's my conversation with Yoman Rodriguez, the Northwest League All-Star with a .369 average, who's come into Lansing, and he's doing terrifically for the Lansing Lugnuts right now. Rodriguez currently batting .373. Let's wrap up the show this week by bringing on Jim Tarabokia, the voice of the A-Advanced Needham Blue Jays. Jim, how are you?
Hey, Jesse, how's it going? Looks like you have some reinforcements there in Lansing, huh?
Maybe just a little bit. We'll see how things go. We've been very pleased. But I'm going to start off by asking about your hitters. Let's begin with Demi Ormoloy. How about his two-homer game this past week?
Yeah, with Demi, I think like I said before, and it goes to the job that Matt Young has done as the hitting coach to help these guys make the necessary adjustments that they need to when they get to the advanced state level. I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it, that it's one of the hardest levels in all of professional baseball, especially in the Florida State League, too, where it's very, very hot and that wears on your body a little bit. So I think for him to Matt Young, to help him make the adjustments that he needs. These home runs, they aren't cheapies either. I mean, they're long balls to the opposite way to right center field. When he pulls the baseball, it's hit a long way. So these aren't cheapies, and I've always said with him the power, and there's tools there, and the power can certainly be there, and it is, and it's showing up here in the late part of the season.
Question coming in from Bluebird Banter, quote unquote from Eric T. Casey Clemens is having a nice month. He's hitting .254, .354, .493, 152 weighted runs created plus in August. So, is he finally starting to look like he can handle the Florida State League? Is there a confidence issue? What are your thoughts on Casey Clemens, especially recently, as he's getting things going in the right direction?
Well, I first off, I tip my cap to Bluebird Banter. I love the use of weighted runs created plus. I love the use of weighted on base average as well. It's actually in our game notes. I put them in there in our game notes this season, averages for both of those categories. So hats off to him or her for passing that question along and using that statistic. You know, I think with Casey, you know, it just took some time. And I think, you know, I'm getting demoted down to the advanced A level from double A in the middle of the year, just like getting promoted. It's tough. But I think he's worked on his adjustments like Demi with Matt Young, and he's worked more to be more upright in his stance and get into more of a power position and a more athletic position when he's swinging the bat and when he's getting into his loaded position. So I think that's been a big key for him, is getting a little bit more upright. He was a little bit lower in his stance before that, and I think it compromised him using his legs a little bit. I think he's more in a power position now and getting that proper torque and getting on plane with the pitch, you know, the proper way, because he's in that athletic 50-50 position, and he can get into that position because he's more upright. So I think that's been a huge adjustment for him. And, you know, the power's always been there. That's never been the issue. I think it's just a little more of that consistency, and that's finally showing up as well. And that's going to be big for us in the postseason. I mean, you know, right now, as I look at it, he's slated to bat fifth or sixth in the middle of our order here in the last week of the year and going into the postseason. So he needs to hit, continue to hit, and I think it's finally turning around for him.
There were some other great hitting performances. Norberto Obeso just had a 3-8 game, 3 RBIs, 2 walks, 3 runs scored, albeit in a loss. Chris Beck, 2-hit game yesterday. It was an unusual game, though, because Dunedin collected 15 hits, drew 11 walks, and lost. What did you make of yesterday's game?
Yeah, you know, one of those crazy, just one of those crazy games. You know, it reminds me of the Nationals and Brewers from a weekend ago. I got home in time to catch the end of that game on national television. And I mean, that's what was a 16 inning game where they're going back and forth. You know, it's just one of those games, you know, it was a hot day. And I mean, you know, you can probably attest to this obviously, but you know, when it's hot like that afternoon game, you just never know how, you know, a pitcher may be on, he may throw a one hitter, or the pitchers may struggle and the offense just may come out swinging. It's something you can't explain. It's something that analytics will never be able to explain. Traditional statistics will never be able to explain. I won't be able to explain it. Color commentators can't explain it. Stephen A. Smith can't explain it. Nobody's going to be able to explain it. It's just one of those games, right? So I think, but I, you know, on the flip side of that, it was a lot of fun to watch. And I think, you know, those 15 runs that were scored against us, I don't think it really does proper justice to what the bullpen has done here the last week and a half or so. It's only, I think, the third time that the bullpen's actually given up runs, you know. So, you know, in a game, I mean. So I don't, you know, it's really not a good sample size for what our bullpen has done and how good it's actually been here in the last week and a half or so. And, you know, we're turning the page now to tonight here against the Fire Frogs. And we're going forward, but see, you know, a couple of those guys getting hits, and you know, you mentioned Chris Beck. I'm not surprised by that. I mean, you know, Chris is, you know, I think a talented hitter. He had a grand slam last weekend against Tampa. Hit it a long way too at Steinbrenner Field. Probably would have been out at any ballpark in this league. So, I'm not surprised by that. The backstop that we have right now, the combination of Kirk and Beck, is as solid as it comes. I think that's going to pay dividends to us come the postseason.
With Jim Tarabocchia, the voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays. Jim, we have about 45 seconds left in our time. Any last thoughts that you would like to throw out there before an hour you call the DJs against the Fire Frog?
You know what? No. I'm good to go. I've done a lot of talking here the last couple of weeks, so I'm good. I'm sick of hearing myself.
Well, here's wishing you well. And I hope that bullpen continues to perform, and everybody tune in, because it's true. It's getting underway in about 60 minutes, Dunedin against Florida. Jim Tarabocchia, thank you so much.
All right, Jesse, take care.
at Jim Terra on Twitter. For Jim Terra Bokia, Rob Fazak, Helton Adam Jackson, Tyler Murray, and Pat Malacaro, I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. Thanks to Hayden Godfrey and the Minor Leaguer. And remember, you can find us at Around Nest on Twitter. Big thanks to Bluebird Banter at Jay Goldstrass for me on Twitter. Until next week, enjoy the baseball.